Does that do what you want?
Or in the following amounts, yeah, that's, that deals with that one problem. The difficulty is...
Let's deal with that problem right now, then, right? I'm gonna... One little problem, but folks, you don't do anything toward progress unless you take it one little bit at a time, and we're, and Senator Bunn is saying, Ingrid, what was that?
Trying to find it.
It's on page four, it's slide 14, page 2, basically. For purposes of subsection, the following amounts constitute, what did you say?
Madam Chair, in, on page 2, line 13.
That's 13, okay.
The last two is for personal, just start at 4, and eliminate for personal use, and then the next sentence on 14, which is for purposes of this section, the following amounts constitute an amount greater than for personal use.
Madam Chair, if it'd be possible to just get rid of personal use.
That's what we're going to do here.
And that's, yeah. And it's also on page 3. And an easy way to do it may just be, the offender was in possession of controlled substances in the following amounts, colon. And you strike all of 14 and 15. And you just have an amendment to line 12. In the following
amounts. In that case, you have to be in possession of those following amounts, plus you've got to go back here and you've got to qualify for those factors.
Yes.
And that's really what you're looking at. You're not making a statement. We're not making a statement that it's that it gets them off the hook for anything. We're just saying these are what all adds up, and the final adding up is what we're going to use for sort of determining of where you fall in the...
Sure.
Where you can begin to look for.
And not less than the following amount.
Madam Chair.
Just, no. Just let Ingrid do this, huh?
All right.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bunn.
If we're dealing with the being gross, then that's not even a question under the being gross, because that part's eliminated on page 3.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay. Well, we still have it on page 2, though.
Yes.
Right.
Then so that's
but if we deal with it on page 2, within the being gross, there shouldn't be a need to deal with it again.
Right.
The most concerning these numbers, the most telling comparison between the A and B bill may be in the amount of allowable marijuana. The district attorneys have proposed 30 grams or more. 29 grams is an ounce, and we have made less than an ounce of marijuana not a crime. And they're proposing that one more gram might subject this person to a penitentiary sentence. That's inappropriate.
A rare circumstance, Madam Chair, the situation being that I think we live in the world of thinking that sales are of ounces. Ounce sales are major quantities again. Sales of use or personal use are 1/8 ounce. And you talk about buds of sesamelia and everything else, that's the difficulty. 30 grams of marijuana is going to be broken into 1/8 ounce and 1/4 ounce baggies and sold in that manner.
Mr. Koenig has shown me that the federal schedules start at 250 grams of marijuana, which is 1/2 pound.
For purposes of otherwise aggravation.
Yes.
Okay.
Are we trying to conform to federal?
No,
are we trying to make it easier for Dale Penn to bust somebody?
Actually, what we're trying to do is to come, I would hope, is come up with something that's sort of in between where we are now, which is they can't charge for any kind of aggravated sale, delivery, or manufacture very well. And the feds. We're trying to come up with some place in between there, which allows the district attorneys to charge a heavier penalty that's somewhere between taking them all the way to the feds and to try to get to those in-between dealer types that you don't have the case that can get you all the way to the federal system. I think that's where we are trying to do here.
And that's
correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's accurate.
Senator Bunn,
well,
are you ready?
I'm ready. With the changes, Madam Chair, that we made on page 2, lines 13 through 15, I'd move the bill.
Okay, Senator Bond has moved the bee and gross bill as we've made changes. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Ben.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Let's move, Ingrid, to, we have quickly next.
4681.
Louder, quicker. I don't care about that. He's not coming. Okay, 2681.
Yeah, I've got this.
Pornography. Child pornography.
Yeah.
Madam Chairman of the committee.
I guess he passed me.
A4 and A5 amendments are being provided in a hand-engrossed version of the bill, which includes both those sets of amendments. The A4 amendments were the proponent's amendments, and they deal with the library exception to the pornography bill. The A5 amendments represent changes that the committee seemed to accept at the last meeting, and basically what those would do would be to make changes on page 2 of the bill, section 8. So as to create 3 means of observing sexually explicit conduct by a child that would amount to a C felony. And basically, those are, number one, to either pay, exchange, or give anything of value to observe sexually explicit conduct by a child. Two, to knowingly observe for the purposes of arousing or gratifying the sexual desire of the person sexually explicit conduct by the child. And three, it would be unlawful for any person to pay, exchange, or give anything of value to obtain or view a photograph, motion picture, videotape, or other visual recording of sexually explicit conduct involving a child. Those would all be Class C felonies. And
okay.
I'm sorry, it also deletes the word graphic, the language graphic focus on line 16 of page 2.
And that, okay, great. I just want to say that does not sort of do the ACLU amendments. It does represent, I think, what the committee was trying to drive at, and we can talk a little and see where that gets us.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'd move the, do you want both A4 and A5 at the same time or one at a time?
Ingrid, what's, well, we certainly need to do the A4 and the A5.
Yep. I'd move the A4 and 5 amendments.
Okay. Senator Bond moves House Bill 2681, A4 and A5 amendments. Discussion. Yes, if we want to where we are here at.
Okay. Madam Chair, my concern, and I think I ended by saying that I supported the ACLU amendments. After talking to Representative Mannix, I believe that the bill adequately deals with the concerns because of the burden of proof of intent. So I'm willing to support the bill without the ACLU amendments.
Yeah, and basically what you're referring to is the language that says for the purpose of arousing or gratifying, that's added there in that. I think that just that.
We've got it in that provision, although we don't have it throughout. At least we've dealt with it in one area that I think is a problem.
Okay, further comments?
Madam Chair.
Shoemaker.
I wonder if it would be well, again, I think, to provide constitutional protection that. And I'm referring here to some provisions that are in House Bill 2669, which I know we're coming to, which I think have been essentially constructed by the U.S. Supreme Court. And we'd have to tailor them to this bill, but essentially, if the offensive portions are not merely incidental, an incidental part of an otherwise non-offending whole, or the material taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value,
and taken as a whole is harmful to minors and it appeals to and incites prurient interest. Those are kind of litmus tests for pornography.
I think that takes, I would resist that. I think basically it weakens the existing statute, and we heard the reason for doing this was basically that in effectuating child pornography and these kinds of materials that you are in fact causing damage to the child by virtue of having created it. So that's the piece, that's the difference between mm-hmm. what you're doing here is you're exposing children to that kind of material in the other bill that you're referring to. And in this particular bill, we are making a statement, I believe, that possessing and manufacturing and producing child pornography in it of itself has some different constitutional weight than what they're talking about in the other bill, which you're referring to, which we're going to get to, which talks about exposing and using materials that are not obscene or are not pornographic. I think there is a difference and a distinguishing factor here. If you're concerned,
well, if you think about it, I think you're right, essentially. But take a look at Section 2.1, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of coming off the top of my head here. I haven't really had a chance to think a lot about this. A person commits the crime of possession of depiction of sexual conduct involving a child if a person knowingly possesses any motion picture, visually recording sexually explicit conduct, I think you could imagine a situation where what you have is essentially innocent, but nevertheless technically violates that section. Maybe that isn't going to be prosecuted.
That is current law, actually, and I think there are some.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not current law.
No, it's added to. This is new law.
What? Let's talk about what we have had personally in the current law.
That would be down here.
That's down in section what?
Section 8.
Section 8. Possession is.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Bunn. Do we need that section 1 up there? Go ahead.
I don't know. My question, I guess, comes back to the clarification. The Representative Mannix argued that criminal intent was necessary. If someone picked up a videotape and they got the wrong one and there was something that violated that section, would that in and of itself make it a crime, or does criminal intent have to play in? As my understanding, criminal intent had to be there, and if so, we've already got the constitutional protections that we needed. If not, we've got a big problem.
Yeah, I would ask to Ingrid, if we have Section 8 and we've added to what we've said is it is unlawful for any person to pay, exchange, or give anything of value to observe sexually explicit conduct by a child or knowingly observe for the purpose of arousing sexually explicit conduct. And I'm wondering whether we need the sub 1 of Section 2 at all.
Well, Madam Chair, isn't that dealing with possession and the other dealing with the act of
observing? Yes, okay, possession. So what do we have under possession today? Tell me where we have possession.
So with Section 8, you can nail somebody if you... if you can prove that they were observing it. Otherwise, you're out of luck. But if you show they possessed it, you've still got something under sub 1.
Right.
Madam Chair, maybe Ingrid could enlighten me about the degree of criminal intent that is required for crimes of this nature.
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, this would require knowing possession. And then there's a provision in Section 9 that you have to, it's an affirmative defense that you didn't realize that the person involved was less than 18.
What does knowing mean? Just that you know you've got it?
Well, I'll read you the statutory
evil
definition.
Evil intent, mens rea, what are we?
It's not very helpful. knowingly is defined in 161.095 of the Criminal Code, subsection 8, and it just says, knowingly or with knowledge, when used with respect to conduct or a circumstance described by a statute defining an offense, means that a person acts with an awareness that the conduct of the person is of a nature so described or that a circumstance so described exists.
Lord, that's not mens rea. Does that mean that you don't have to prove guilty intent and evil intent?
No. I guess we need to...
Yeah, I don't...
The only question I would have was the people...
The
people who came to testify talked about why... I guess it's a depiction of sexual conduct. Why taking a photograph of your child nude on the beach would not be included, and maybe that sexual conduct is what does their depiction of sexual conduct is what you're talking about. Yes, Senator Bunn.
I think the explicit conduct is what eliminates that, and also the amendment that we dealt with on page 2, line 16, or graphic focus on, that amendment was necessary to eliminate that possibility. I think by amending that, we've taken out the risk of that happening.
I'm sorry, Jim. What is that?
Okay. The concern of a photograph of your child was primarily based upon page 2 of the bill, line 16.
Okay. Taking out graphic focus. That's your point.
So you don't have to worry about where your camera's focused when you snap the picture.
Well, I guess, Senator Shoemaker, would you need, you know, I'm trying to recall the exact part of what we've done here in terms of this possession crime. The crime is possession of a depiction of sexual conduct involving a child. That's the crime that we're creating here. Crime of possession of a depiction of sexual conduct involving a child.
And that crime is defined as knowingly possesses or controls any picture of all different sorts.
Sexually
explicit conduct involving a child, and that explicitly that's defined as
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Bunn.
The way it is, it isn't by accident that you have it. I mean, you have to know, and it's not just that you know you picked up a tape, but it seemed to me from the definition, you have to know the content is sexually explicit conduct involving a child.
Yeah, I guess it's
fine. And if you've met that criteria, you violated it clearly, and I don't think we're making innocent victims.
Okay.
Okay. Senator Bunn has moved the A4 and the A5 amendments. Are there further comments, further questions, further clarifications? Call the roll, please, Kate.
Senator Bunn.
Aye. Senator Hill.
Oh, aye.
What?
I don't know if anyone objected to the amendments.
Is this on the amendments or the bill?
Oh, okay. Okay, are there objections to the amendments then? Nobody objects?
Madam Chair, I move the bill to the Dupes.
Okay, Senator Bond moves House Bill 2681 to the floor with the Dupes recommendation as we've amended it. Call roll, please.
Senator Ben.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bond. Okay. What do we have left here? 20. I misplaced my agenda here.
3317.
I've got
2390.
Those without color on them haven't yet been heard.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's gone. That's gone.
It's gone. What are you having?
We have 3317. Larry Oglesby is here
okay.
to help us with that. But
3317. You don't
have a chance to talk.
Okay. Well, let's bring him up. Senator Bunn.
I think Representative Bell is having her office type up the amendments right
okay,
now.
Okay, so that's it. Do we want to be in recess for about 5 minutes? Oh, actually, what we have is we have some witnesses from Eugene who've come, and maybe they're left already. They're still here on House Bill 2934. And now that we have a break, and we finished quicker than I thought, let's, who was it?
Hey, we sent this one back.
Brian Doherty, you had someone here on the animal bill?
Yes.
Why don't you let them come on up since they have to leave?
2934.
And I would ask you to be brief. I'm not sure what we're talking about is trying to get this out of here with a decreased penalty piece of it. So we would ask you to be brief.
I understand that, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Doherty, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Medical Research Foundation. I will save the rest of my comments until later, unless you wish to go through with this bill with other witnesses. But just to introduce or allow the two witnesses here that need to leave to testify on behalf of this bill that's before you. It is an animal research facility, a research facility interference bill that enhances the crime for such interference. And I'd like these witnesses to testify to you on behalf of this bill.
Okay, thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record. That would be great.
My name is Pam Daner. I live in Eugene and have a 9-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son. And we're members of a national research advocacy group that's called Incurably Ill for Animal Research. I want to testify in favor of this bill because I personally believe that research has been slowed by the intimidation that research scientists have to endure these days. And I think it's time to stand up to the thugs and the terrorists who break into laboratories because I think scientists are leaving the field of biomedical research or not going into it because they favor safer careers. The reason I'm involved with this is that 4 years ago, when my son was 2 years old, we were told that he suffers from Duchenne muscular dystrophy. At the time, the doctors who diagnosed him told us that we would expect him to be crippled when he was 7 or 8, and in a wheelchair when he was 10 or 11, and dead before he was 20. They said there was no treatment for his condition, and they basically told us to take him home and watch him die. Unless you have experienced such a diagnosis, I can tell you, you cannot comprehend what it means. I know that you can imagine it for a minute, but basically you can shake it off and say, thank God it's not me. Thank God it's not my child. Those of us who must live with it day after day cannot shake it off, cannot make it go away. We live on hope. And our hope lies within the walls of medical research laboratories on the shoulders of scientists who've given their lives over to the quest for cure to terrible human diseases. I would like you to see the world for a minute the way that I have to see it and watch my son deteriorate, wake up every morning looking in the headlines, hoping that today is the day the miracle cure is found. and reading instead that another Labrador has been vandalized or burned, decades of research destroyed. I had the experience of talking to a researcher at Stanford University because they had recently discovered that there were a family of dogs that had the disease that my son had. She told me that she would not start working on those dogs. She would continue to work on mice because animal activists would disrupt her research if she tried to use dogs. I used to believe that you could talk to these people. And in fact, a year ago, I gave a talk to a group trying to convince them that they're misguided, trying to tell them that animal research is necessary. At the end of my talk, a young man stood up and asked me why I wanted to save all these cripples. They told me that there are already too many people on the planet and that you should just let the cripples die. He said this to me after I had described my situation, and the crowd applauded his statement. In the end, radical animal rights activists hate human beings. They see human technology as the root of all evil. They see the use of animals for human benefit as a symptom of depravity rather than as a good, positive contribution to the value of life. If you think this legislation is duplicative or unnecessary, I want you to think about the researchers who put up with the insults and threats and attacks, and about those of us who are waiting. And I hope that you will send a signal.
I'm going to interrupt you to say I was a medical researcher for 15 years before I came to do this business, so I just want to let you know that some of us are understanding that. Thanks. Go ahead, please.
That's basically it. I just hope that you have the compassion to pass the legislation and see it into law.
Okay, thank you. Next, please.
My name is Dr. Richard Morocco, and I'm a biomedical researcher at the University of Oregon. And you are probably all aware of the events that happened to our university some 4 years ago now, and I don't want to spend very much time on those other than to say that I was one of the people that was involved in the repercussions from those break-ins. And I know that earlier today it was mentioned by Senator Schroeder that only approximately two experiments were affected, but the reality is that many more, in fact, were either ruined altogether or postponed by that break-in. But rather than talk about those sorts of things, I'd like to provide something that is perhaps a bit more intangible, and that's the effect of these break-ins on the lives of personnel. And that personnel is right here talking to you today, me. Since the break-in, not only myself, but others who work in this particular area have been subject to a massive campaign of harassment and character assassination. We have been the target of numerous suits aimed at us personally, and especially the university, the Institutional Animal Care and Use Committee especially. Almost on a daily basis, we have to deal with requests for all of the protocols that we do when we do experiments. Animal rights activists have requested students to boycott our classes. They have urged alumni to suspend donations to the university and to terminate science programs and so on. We get hate mail fairly regularly, and I know that I've been the target of death threats. Just within the past year, several of these animal groups, the Students for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, filed suit against the Institutional Animal Care and Use Committee to stop the work that I had been doing. And I know that I've spent much of my time in bits and pieces, but in some cases whole chunks of days in attorney's offices giving depositions and so on. And in one recent event, the CETA group examined my protocol and found it to be duplicative of previous research, and they wrote letters to the Oregon Attorney General and the Lane County District Attorney suggesting that I be prosecuted for fraud and misrepresentation. There was no basis to this, and of course both those officials found that to be true, but dealing with this sort of thing means that everything else comes to a stop in the work we're supposed to be doing, of course, is the main target. The events of the past 3 years or so really have changed me personally as a human being. I'm now almost unwilling to discuss my work with anybody that I don't know. I mean, I'm actually paranoid about telling people what I do. My self-confidence has suffered. My research has slowed noticeably, and I would always try to do experiments that did not involve animals, which I do use in my work, rather than become the target of this kind of activity. People approached me to work in my lab much less frequently for a while, and I became suspicious of those that did, and I always would do things like security checks on them and so on. My locks have been changed. As it stands now, we don't even have janitorial service in the laboratories. We have to do it all ourselves, primarily because we don't want much access to the laboratory. So just let me summarize what I have to say, and we urgently need legislation like this. Certainly, deterrence, I think, will work. It certainly, in the very least, would provide a very marked boost to the morale of many of the researchers who work in this area, because in most cases,
one, you have to know or have good reason to know the character of the material furnished. What is the character of that material? That's then very limited. Did you know that this was a book which the offensive portions are not merely incidental part of an otherwise non-offending whole, and the material taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value, and the material furnished to the minor taken as a whole is harmful to minors and that it appeals to and incites prurient interest? You had to know all of that, and you had to know that the person was a minor, and then you furnished the book to him. I cannot imagine, and you have to, and this all has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And my attitude is, if I can't prevent anyone from being subjected to malicious prosecution other than the civil laws, which may allow you to bring action. But if you ever wanted to have a law on the books that was so carefully crafted that you would have to truly have a dirty bookseller selling dirty books to dirty kids, this is such a law. You'd have to have a prosecutor who is definitely out of line in order to have an inappropriate prosecution under this statute. And again, I could say this for any criminal law. I can't stop prosecutors from being out of line except for how I define the statute and the offense. And this is so carefully defined as to the offense that you would have to have basically gone through the book, known that it was going to hurt this kid, be bad for this kid, known that it would not meet be non-obscene by any appropriate standard, and know that this is a kid and sell it or furnish it to the kid.
But if under our First Amendment protections, an adult can shop for dirty books and there can be stores that make them available to adults, and we say that, all things considered, that behavior is not acceptable, but okay. To then make it illegal to do it, to sell that same material to minors in a kind of an open store context, sort of forces the store to say no minors permitted, or to have adults-only sections within the store, do those kinds of things, rather than having a healthy mix of adults and minors perusing the books and on the bookshelf.
Well, actually, there are outlets that have adults-only sections for that very reason, that where they do restrict access to people under the current law, so that they can establish that they're not minors. Not just bookstores, other kinds of stores too. And at some point, you have to make a determination. Do you want to make this kind of conduct illegal? Well, it's been made illegal. Then the question is, do you want to refine it and define it as narrowly as possible? So any legitimate bookseller who sells to someone who looks like they're an adult, you're off the hook. Sells to someone and the bookseller hadn't read the book, hadn't looked inside the book, they're off the hook. They're going to have to know what was in the book. They're going to have to know what's harmful to a minor. They're going to have to know this is a minor. It has to be, it can't be a non-offending whole It's got to be that the whole darn book is bad, and it's bad for kids. At some point, yeah, you've got to say, gee, we're willing to give a prosecutor a chance to convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that this was something that shouldn't have been done. And I really don't know how much further we could go to restrict this and still have some sort of enforcement so that kids are protected from adults who want to perpetrate this kind of act and push this kind of material on them. And I appreciated Stevie Remington coming up because I think this reflects that we've tried to narrow the statute. Well, it's not a broadening, it's narrowing.
I give you credit for what you've done, and I do, I mean that. I mean, you really have drawn a very careful statute, which really does.
I think Dale Penn is creeping up again. Dale, how many more times?
Man on the white horse.
Senator Budd wants to go home and go farming. We really do.
I'll be real quick, Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker. I would simply like to voice my support for the bill because of the observations that Senator Shoemaker had made. The present statutory scheme is flawed. And yet, even in the Oregon Supreme Court opinion, which said that obscenity is protected for adults in Oregon, there was mention of the fact that it may be a different situation for minors. And maybe society needs to do something to protect children. We don't know how far that goes. And so I applaud the efforts made here to narrowly draft this. And the reality is that you don't have anyone out there. And I'm certainly not looking for more business, or am I wanting to go after bookstores per se. But we do have adult-only bookstores in this community who voluntarily now say, you don't come in here if you're a minor. And we've talked about it, and they say, now, if we really don't have to do this, Dale, because you can't do anything to us if we allow minors in here, but we don't want the hassle, so we'll keep them out. They do that voluntarily, but there is no enforcement scheme, and if you have the person who wants to aggressively take that on, society and the public does not agree with that. And I think this is narrowly drafted to try to protect children. And I don't see that there's any enforcement pattern by anyone in this state or any desire to get into that. And I think these knowing requirements makes it impossible unless you have someone who basically has been warned and says, I don't care, do something about it. But I think it is very narrowly done without any kind of abuse. Available.
How many amendments do we have? How many amendments do we have to this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we only have the -A5 amendments, which are from the ACLU.
Okay.
And I have no objection to those.
Thank you.
Great. Madam Chair?
Yes.
May I ask a question of Representative Mannix? Representative, if you could point out to me, where in the bill is it that the person who's allegedly committing the crime needs to know that the person, the victim, for lack of other word, is actually a minor?
Well, since it requires that you have to have provided it to a minor, and we define in another part of the statute an unmarried person under 18 years of age, the knowingly provision, I see what you're saying. You might want to say knowingly furnishes to a minor to make it clear that we also say that he knew that the person was a minor.
Because I remember from law school the old bigamy and statutory rape and so on, where it didn't matter if you knew that, you know. Got the idea.
I have no problem with putting knowingly in front of furnishes to make it clear that, or knowing the person to be a minor, or having good reason to know, would take care of it. We weren't trying to get at people who look older than they are or whatever.
Okay, the amendments with the addition of, where would one put that? Call on the Representative Amanda Mannix and see, give you your last chance here to come to the Senate committee and fix them.
Thank you. Well, it says person furnishes to a minor, line 16, page 1. Person furnishes to a minor either knowing or having good reason to know that the person is a minor. And that phrase would have to be inserted.
Okay, Ingrid is here, who is the best lawyer we have, who's not really on this case, but we're recruiting her. She says having good reason to know is not really a good standard. Could we talk a little bit about this and have a little dialogue here?
Madam Chair, and members of the committee and Representative Mannix, I say that because it is just not, that terminology isn't used in the criminal law anywhere that I'm aware of, having good reason to know.
I was trying to think of some terminology that would fit where there's...
Let's get Dale Penn and Ingrid up here to figure out what have some other alternatives to having good reason to know.
It may be that if you use knowingly again.
Or, I don't know what this is all about.
Madam Chair, probably a fast amendment that you'll have to live with knowingly. I have to prove knowingly, like, even though theft by receiving says good reason to know, case law has thrown that out. I would imagine the same thing would apply in this situation. I'd have to prove knowingly. So
you say knowingly furnishes to a minor. That means you knew that the person was a minor. And that could be put in each section where we talk. We did take care of, under sending obscene materials, it already says knowing or having, no. I guess, knowing that the person is a minor. Just insert that.
We need to add knowingly furnishes and rearrange those sentences then in order to make sure that they are in line for something that's clearly understandable and that Mr. Penn knows what he has to prove and Ingrid knows what she has to defend or otherwise around, you know. Don't retired prosecutors get it?
I always thought Ingrid had the mind of a prosecutor. I don't tire to defense here.
Interestingly enough, Madam Chair, we already had knowingly in the other parts of the statute. It's only in Section 1 that knowingly does not appear in terms of the furnishing or sending or dispatching. So if you put person knowingly furnishes to a minor, you've taken care of it.
Okay. Representative Bunn, do you have any problem with adding the word knowingly here to your, in the proper places so we can say, we can make sure that we have an understanding that you have to know it's minor and you have to also knowingly furnish and you have to knowingly ship or dispense or whatever.
Display.
And that is a...
Sounds great.
Do we have any objections to the A5 plus the further amendments on... House Bill 2669. Hearing none. You want to object,
no.
Senator Shoemaker?
No, I'm not objecting to the amendments. I'm still troubled. I've been reading this, the section regarding display, and I know this is maybe it's not worth it.
No.
Mm-hmm. You had in a bookstore a book with a cover on it that showed a man touching a woman's breasts, even if she had clothes on or if they were obviously engaged in sexual intercourse, even if they're under blankets. I think technically you would be displaying obscene materials to a minor if the minor was there, because there would be a picture of sexual conduct, and that would violate Section 3. And then you'd have to defend, if they wanted to make a case of it, you'd have to come in and show that material as a whole, you know, met these other standards. Now, I don't suppose that any DA would take a case like that, but technically it fits within this statute. And
okay.
I don't know what other examples are here that...
I don't either. I guess I'd like to make my pitch on both the bills we had today. Last session and this session, too, we've had major fights on changing the Constitution. And I really appreciate the people who brought two bills to us, which are not constitutional amendments, that we as a committee can try to craft something narrow and that's going to be usable to protect the young people in our society. And that's where I am on this issue. So I'm going to vote for it. Okay, Senator Bunn moves House Bill 2669 to the floor as amended.
Adopt amendments?
Yes, we did. Okay. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
No. Troubled, but aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay. We have two little bills left. and I think we're ready. 3317. Senator Springer has to be excused, I think.
Without your obligation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Or you can wait 2 or 3 minutes and vote on the rest.
I think I've Madam, had quite enough opportunity.
Let me just comment, Madam Chair, yes. Regarding that last vote. I'm not comfortable with the bill, but I didn't want to defeat it within committee or force it to be brought back tomorrow when you had a fuller quorum, and I appreciate your concern, and I acknowledge it's a very close call.
Well, you're welcome.
I vote.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Do you want to take, how much trouble are we going to have to round people back up again? What we have is we've got one, two, three, we've got four bills, two which will take a couple of minutes here. And then we have the animal bill, and then we have the murder bill with Ingrid's amendments. Can you want to share those? What's that?
This, Madam Chair, this is a hand prepared copy of a proposed amendment.
Yeah, we might. Dick? Hey, Dick?
Dick out there.
Is Dick here?
He's gone.
Well, we may need
We need to explain something to the
No, I think we're good. Okay. 3317.
Madam Chair, members have a hand engrossed copy of the bill, and on the engrossed provision is on the back. And basically, what it would provide is that a juvenile counselor, caseworker, teacher, or detention worker to whom this information was provided would exercise their professional judgment and decide whether or not the information needed to be disclosed.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Byrne.
The amendments also changed two other things. On line 26, changed may to shall, which makes that consistent with the language above.
Right, and we've changed the clear and immediate there, right?
Correct. And then also on line 26, it is changed from CSD caseworker back to the person, which is in existing language. The problem mentioned was CSD contracts with counties and other agencies. I think we've got a question above. Hopefully we've covered enough folks, but we got agreement that at least on that part we wouldn't deal with it.
I think that's fair. And I think it's real clear that we're really talking about the disclosure. Okay, are there objections to the amendments as presented to us in the A.N. Gross 317? I'm going to put a date 6/12 on it, folks. Hearing none, so ordered. Okay, I think the bill is ready to go.
Move House Bill 3317 as amended. The floor to pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Hill has moved House Bill 3317 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Benn.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. You want to bring up the other bill, Senator Benn? 3106. Or do you want to go way home?
No, I'm fine. It's going to be dark by the time.
You're going to turn your lights on when you're doing sewing wheat or?
No, just chopping brush.
Oh. Okay, 3106 is the citation bill that we didn't have enough votes for.
What?
And I think the sheriffs are crying and the DAs don't care.
Yeah, I moved it, Madam Chair. Well, I'll move it again. Yep. All right, I'm sorry.
They haven't convinced me. Maybe they want to come up and
okay, come on up. Let's convince again. And while we have it here, Dale, come on up.
Get up there, Dale.
Creep up here. Yeah.
Why should we bother with 3106?
Madam Chair, Russ Spencer for the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, primarily because I've been good all session, and I've you guys, just give me a break, would you?
Doesn't work for Senator Bunn.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Another argument, Madam Chair.
As you will recall from testimony from Sheriff Weiris, as he said, this is primarily an efficiency issue for law enforcement. Currently, you would have to go to the district attorney, get a warrant, get the guy, arrest him, book him, mugshot him, fingerprint him, hold him, and let him go, when all you really wanted to do in the first place and the best service for justice was simply to write him a ticket and say, be at the courthouse at 9 a.m. on Thursday to answer this charge. And in a nutshell, that's all it is. We're not going out trying to have any greater arrest power over anybody. This is not a custody arrest situation. It's simply so that we can get our officers on to the next call, keep the jails as empty as we can, and just get on with business. In a nutshell, that's it.
Madam Chair, Russ, in reality, isn't the situation now that you say to the folks, I didn't see it, it's a Class C misdemeanor, I can't arrest him, you want to deal with it, here's how. And it ends it. I mean, basically, I mean, I've had enough times where folks complained and they wanted me to get in the middle of their beef with somebody else. And when it's something like that, we just don't get into it. But now all of a sudden we're going to get into every B and C misdemeanor, whether or not we were there, and whether or not somebody just let it go away.
Well, perhaps Mr. Penn would like to respond to that a little bit. I would state that there's always the issue of officer discretion and whether or not to issue that citation.
Mm.
But it's a little bit enhanced right now.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Senator Bunn, I guess my thoughts are
we need
that,
your name for the record.
Oh, yeah. Dale Penn, District Attorney Association.
For all of this.
Excuse me. The difficulty is that the officer's involved, and no one lets them just walk away. They're going to do a report, and that's going to be submitted, and we may make a decision on that. This actually, I think the efficiency is impact on jail and processing, because the officer is going to do something, and it's not just going to be, I'll see you later, because then you're just going to get calls to the sergeant or lieutenant or the sheriff. But this would allow the officer to resolve it there. This is the information I have, as they do in every other case and have the authority to do, but they could do it by citation. And then when you go through and it is a case that's going to be prosecuted, the person appears, you can proceed. If it's a case that we would say we'd exercise our discretion, no, we aren't going to proceed with this, then it's just done at that point. But no one gets arrested. Nobody gets processed through the jail unless it is something that's going to go through two steps of discretion. And I think it saves that step.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Bunn.
Well, Dale, currently if somebody says I had so-and-so trespassing on my property, mm-hmm. wouldn't that be one of the larger instances where this would come into play, and now the police really don't get into it a whole lot? I mean, they have complaints, and they say if you want to follow up on it, you can. It seems to me we're just creating a lot more work for the police that they don't need. They've got enough serious mm-hmm. problems to deal with, not to be playing tag with all of these.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Bunn, I agree. There's too many cases, and I'm not asking for more myself. But the problem is that officer would still do a report. I went out there, I talked to this person, they told me this guy trespassed, and this is what I know. And then that comes to my office, and I'm going to read it, and I'm going to say, well, we don't do trespasses, sorry. Or it's something that we file, but if it's something we file, and this can apply to harassment, where someone got hurt, got spit on, they got slapped, they got pushed around, and on those, I'm much more aggressive about looking at filing that, but we've got to do a warrant, go out, do a custodial arrest process through the jail. This just says the officer could do a citation, and as far as his discretion is concerned, he's done. I may still decide we don't have the ability to pursue it, but I don't see any real abuse for it. I guess that would be my position, is that in any other crime they can do this, and this just gives citation authority, not arrest authority. So if they want a custodial arrest, they're going to have to go through a warrant process.
Well, Madam Chair, if I'm the only member of the committee that's got a problem with it, I won't block it from going to the floor. I just don't think it's necessary. But if anybody else has the same...
Yes, they'll hold it over again.
I'm willing to vote for it. I'm not wildly enthusiastic about it, but I think it's at worst harmless.
Well, I'll try it again, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 3106 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Madam Chair, technical correction. I think last time there was a comment that the word citation is not legally precise. It ought to be a non-custodial arrest.
I defer to Ingrid on that, Madam Chair.
Mark, whatever.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, that question did arise, and that was one of the questions that we brought to LC. It's my understanding that arrest and basically is of two types. One is when you issue a citation. The second is when you actually take custody of the defendant. And so when you issue a citation, you are, in fact, arresting the person.
So it is a precise word.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, Senator... Senator Hill moves.
Strong resemblance.
Right. This may be one of these bills that sort of floats out there and gets on the floor.
Well, I know that they will be lobbying it heavily.
Senator Hill moves House Bill 3106 to the floor of the due pass recommendation with some reservations. Call the roll, please.
Senator Benn.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. 2885. Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. And we took care of 217. The only, we have 2394.
93. Yes.
Okay, Ingrid has a revision to the -7 amendments on 2393. Okay. That picks up the DAs.
There we are.
Yes. Picks up the world.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I distributed it's basically a white sheet of paper with printing on it. I'm sorry it's not identified.
612, write the date 612, and it's regarding House Bill 2393-7 amendments, right? Dash which amendments? -4 amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair, and this would be substituted in the -4 amendments for the material which appears in section 7 of those amendments. Beginning on the bottom of page 2 and continuing on to page 3. So that section 7 would say the Oregon Criminal Justice Council shall, and then 1 and 2 as indicated on this sheet. And I did discuss that with Mr. Penn of the District Attorney's Association, and he would not object to that language.
Thank you. Are there objections here to the substitution of that language in Section 7 of the -4 amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. Have we moved, the Chair, the -4 amendments? Yes. Senator Brown.
Well,
did we do this?
No, we haven't done the bill.
No, Madam Chair. The committee moved to delete section 2 of the bill, but did not move the -4 amendments yet.
All right.
Okay, so that's been, section 2 has been deleted.
That's correct.
Okay.
So, Chair moves A4.
The -A4 amendments, which include, as we've amended them to, which would include, as Ingrid has gone through, the H. Bill 2392, the fourth question issue, request from the state police and the Criminal Justice Council reviewing those statutes and the repeal of their sunset, and an emergency clause. That's what the IA4 amendments are. Plus, we have already deleted the Section 2.
Good thing, or it wouldn't happen.
Right. Okay, are there objections to the -A4 amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. The bill is ready.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2393 for the fourth and due pass as amended for the fourth and due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Hill has moved House Bill 2393 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Benn.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Okay, we have let's take a 10-minute break. Or say a 15-minute break. Let me tell you what we have left for the evening. We have a remainder of 2934, the animal medical or the research bill. We've got a couple of witnesses who have not yet testified on that, and we have amendments to that, which I think are okay with the sponsors, and we can move that bill when we finish the testimony. We have a hearing on House Bill 2885, which ought to be quick. We have, and I would say that will be just a hearing. We have.
You mean just a work session?
Oh.
That's what it's noted for.
These are for hearing. Pardon?
Should be on for hearing.
Yeah.
The thing was for hearing.
Yeah, it's for hearing.
Well, we can have hearing with invited testimony.
Yeah, it's hearing. Well, whoever. Then we have a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2805, which is a request from the Linden's office with respect to passing out one piece of that bill, and then House Bill 3440, which is the civil penalty for violation of firework statutes. So we have a quick agenda, folks. Take 15 minutes, try to gather up the rest of our committees as soon as they're done, and come back and be out of here by 6 o'clock.